Did everyone do their personalities? Did you grade them? Well, let's do that. Hey, Steve, can we get the answers to the personality things? Did everyone fill it out and finish it? Did you think about it too much, or was it quick? Dang, sometimes we think about those things too much. Let's hand out those answers, and we're going to talk a little bit about personality, and we'll have you grade them. We have different styles. All right. I'll grade those here in just a second. Let's go through some of our styles. Now, some people are logical, more logical, and some people are emotional. Is that true? And sometimes when they try to persuade or negotiate with each other, what happens? The emotional person might start crying or get upset. The logical person's what? This is a negotiation. What's going on? I just don't understand. So let's talk about these. Remember, smiley face means you have it. So a logical person, how do you know if they're logical or emotional when you meet them for the first time? Yeah, sometimes more formal, more introverted. They tend to use their head. Logic and statistics. Facts and statistics they love. They're concerned about your past history. They're using the five senses. They could have a calculator on their watch. What else are you looking for? Oops, sorry. So they tend to use their five senses. What's making sense to them right now? They tend to be sometimes a little more conservative and darker color, sure. You're looking around, what's on the desk? The logical person, is their desk organized? It's there. And then they go into someone's other office and their desk isn't organized, how do they think about that person? Yeah, how can they live like that? That's so unprofessional. But then you ask that person, can that person still find anything? We've seen cluttered desks, but they can find anything right away. So when a logical person cleans an emotional person's desk, what happens? They get upset because now they can't find anything. It was all right there. They knew exactly where everything was. So that's logical. Now, emotional is they use their heart. They're swayed with emotions. They follow their instinct. They use the sixth sense, that intuition. They have that intuition. We also see introverts versus extroverts. Your ability, remember, is to persuade them how they want to be persuaded. We'll go through this and we'll have you grade your test here in just a second. All right, extroverts. They love to communicate. They'll come out of their office to come see you. They'll meet you. They'll greet you. They love the pop-in. They involve others. They love spectator sports. They're public people. They're fast decision makers. And they love face-to-face contact. These people's desks are also cluttered. So they want a face-to-face meeting. They want to do lunch. They want to meet you. Versus an introvert, what are they going to do? Send me a fax, send me an email. We don't need to meet right now. Well, introverts tend to keep feelings inside. They're private people. They like solo sports like jogging. They love memos and emails. They tend to be very loyal, and they tend to be very good listeners. We've talked about it. Next on the list, this is important too as you judge people, how are they motivated? There's two motivators in life. What are they? Inspiration and desperation. And the way you have to feel this out. Now, do you go to a dentist out of inspiration or desperation? Are you enlightened because out of inspiration or desperation? Inspiration. Your closure, is that inspiration or desperation? Okay, and we have to find out. So how do you know if they're in inspiration or desperation mode? How do you know? You ask questions. And so if someone's in an inspiration or desperation mode, they are moving away from something. They're running away from something. So their word choice, well, I can't wait until this is fixed. I'm getting away from, they're running away from something. Versus inspiration, they're what? They're moving towards it. They can't wait to get there. They're excited to go. They're excited about the journey. So desperation, again, they're getting away from something. They're stuck in the past. And they're tending to avoid punishment. They worry a lot. They're worry. What if this happened? What if this happens? What if this happens? So that's desperation. They're stuck in the past. They're running away from something. You can tell from their word choice. Now, inspiration, They're moving towards something. They're hoping the future. They're excited. They're motivated by rewards and esteem. Now, here's the thing I want to point out that's so important. When someone's in desperation, when their home is in foreclosure, what should you do to motivate them? Should you use desperation or inspiration? A little of both. You're going to have to use a little fear, a little desperation. If they don't do anything, what's going to happen? You're going to lose their house, plus a little inspiration. What could be an inspiration for someone in foreclosure? Okay, pay moving costs, get you back on your feet, restore your credit. This is going to be a small road bump for you. Now, here's the key I want to point out. If someone's buying a property from you for out of inspiration to help fund their grandchildren's college fund or something, they're buying it out of inspiration, you can never use desperation to motivate that person. It will backfire on you every time. Someone's an inspiration, keep it at inspiration, don't use desperation. When someone's in desperation, you use a combination of both. This will happen if you don't do it. This is what's going to happen. This is the good things that are going to happen. Does that make sense to everyone? You with me? So, desperation, you use both. If they're an inspiration, you stay in inspiration, because if you go to desperation, it will backfire on you. Then there is the assertive versus the amiable. These types clash. Somebody wants a friend, and somebody just wants to get the deal done. Amiable wants a hug, and assertive is more, you snooze, you lose, you weren't there, you miss out. So let's talk about it. Assertive, results are more important than relationships. They love control. They're very impatient. They're task-oriented. They love that control, and they don't waste time. They also tend to be quick decision-makers. The last thing you want to do is work on the relationship first with an assertive person. Right to the point. They don't want to talk about the weather. They don't care what sports are on TV. You're here to negotiate. Start the negotiation. The relationship. They don't care about the relationship. Get to the point. Let's talk to the point. Now later you might want to develop a relationship, but not until you have a foundation there. Now amiable, relationships are almost more important than the results. They're great listeners. They're slow decision makers. They avoid contention. They get tense if you try to persuade them, and especially if you do it the wrong way. They're friendly and they're loyal. Life of the party. And they just avoid contention. They won't confront you. What will they do? They'll avoid you. They'll disappear. They just won't return your phone calls. That's why when you're in a persuasion negotiation, if you push an amiable too hard, they'll just never come back to your store. They'll never talk to you again. So let's take a look. Let's do a quick grading on your personalities. Everyone have an answer sheet? All right, go through that real quick and just circle. It's easier if you put a piece of paper across it because the numbers go across. And then you just circle the one that you chose. So, dirty deeds. The pity play. Wife's pregnant. It's not fair. Transmission. You want to be known as the person that kicked me out of my house. They want sympathy. Now, we want to be sympathetic to a certain point, but they can't make their problem your problem. So, you just say, I'm sorry. I apologize. You can have empathy or sympathy, but you can't have their problem become your problem. You're there to help them as much as you can. You can appeal to a higher authority, or you can throw the bear back. Let them know that, well, sorry your home's going into foreclosure, and they're going to try to make it your fault, right? But yeah, through questions, you can help them realize that's something that they need to work on. Another dirty deed, again, remember, these aren't to use, this is just so you are aware, is the old famous, like, we can't believe it still happens, but it still happens all the time, the good cop, bad cop. Everyone's seen Law and Order or Cop Show, right? What happens? They bring in the convict, and then the one police officer, what do? They badger, they beat him up, I should kill you, I can't believe this, they're after him. And then the one other cop says what? Calm down, why don't you go take a break, and they become a friend. And it's amazing how often you'll see this. It's very old school. So you can be silent, and my favorite thing is to do is say, are you guys using good cop, bad cop? And what are they going to say? No, he's just mad. Just don't worry about it. Identify him. It just neutralizes the situation. Or you can just say, wow, well, where's the solution? You know, your partner's obviously upset. Let's just come to a solution. No reason to bring that type of emotions into this. We can be professional here. Good cop, bad cop. Okay, then there's the emotional jab. So upsetting to me, I could scream. Trying to catch you off guard, you think I'm a moron, I'm humiliated you even do that. Let's talk about it. Well, apologies are cheap, right? Oh, I'm sorry. That was not my intent. Angry people want to fight. They want you to get angry. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's amazing to watch people when they get angry, and we talk about emotions tomorrow, how to deal with emotions. How do you deal with an angry person? How do you deal with a frustrated person? I'm surprised you're upset. What exactly is making you upset? We've talked about it. It's not my intent. I apologize. Then we have the major minor, where they're making minor concessions major, making it a big deal. You're like, if they want to close in 60, 90 days, it's not a big deal. They're trying to make that a major issue. They're trying to confuse you. They're trying to get something under the radar. They might introduce several items at once. It's kind of like the bills in Congress. They're good, but they're piled with what? They call them pork? What's the pork? It's things they're trying to hide in there, things they want to get past. Same thing that's happening here. So you have to let them know that the major is not a minor thing. Take one at a time. Or if they keep throwing 5 or 10 items at you, put values on them. Take them one at a time. They're trying to hide something, they're trying to get something through. And a very important technique, too, is what we talked about, the set-aside technique. If you're negotiating and you hit a roadblock, which is one thing you can just say, well, let's set that aside for now and work on these other things. Because the more things you can agree on, the better track record you have. In fact, you should start negotiating what? The easiest things first, right? Get a track record. Price is going to be the biggest issue. Save that for last. Intimidation. It's a power play. You show up. It's a 1 o'clock appointment, you show up at 1 o'clock, and what happens? They make you wait. Oh, he's not ready right now. Or they invite you in and they make a few phone calls while you're sitting there. Did that happen? Yeah, I can see your face, that happened. How do you deal with that? What's that? Yeah, get on the phone yourself. Or if it's a power play, you say, well, you know what, I've got another appointment, just have him call me when he's ready to visit. Or if it's not that big of a deal, just use it for preparation time. Can we reschedule? That might be one thing you want to do. But if you've been trying to get in for 3 months, you don't want to reschedule, just take it. Just don't let it intimidate you. That's what it's for. It's a power play. You can use it for prep time. You can endure it. You can reschedule. You can get on the phone yourself. Pretty simple. The main thing here is just don't let it bother you, because that's just an old school technique they teach. Make them wait. Make them sweat. Make them get nervous. Just don't do that. Confrontation, in your face, what's your final price? Give me your best deal, let's cut to the chase. I don't want to screw around with this. It's very aggressive. Basically, what's happening is they want you to go first with the number. Because old school negotiation teaches you, never go first. We've seen through the studies that sometimes it's really good to go first. So you can either go first or you can maintain control by, okay, what price are you looking for? What's your final price? Well, what price are you looking for? Pretty simple. You're gaining the control back. And you're diffusing that, because most people won't do that. Most people say, $200,000. Well, what price are you looking for? Gain control. Well, then make me an offer. What's your final price? Well, make me an offer. Or you just say, well, wait a minute. Hey, stop. Whoa. You skipped a turn. This is a negotiation. You go, then I go. You go, then I go, and have some fun with it. That's good for an amiable type person, but not necessarily hairy and analytical. We also have the ultimatum. This is it. We're done. Take it or leave it. Final offer. They're tense. They're trying to intimidate. They've lost control. This is it. We're done. This is my final offer. How do you deal with that? You could ignore it. Try to sense, is it their final offer? Is it just a power play? Say, well, help me understand what standard you're using. Why? How are you getting that number? Why do you need this? And if they're putting that final offer on the table and it's not even close to what you're accepting, it might be time to what? It might be time to walk. Is every negotiation going to result in a solution for both parties? Even in the R12 exercise, a lot of people hit a standstill.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can come back at it, gain control. They're just kind of, they're done with you and they're just throwing it out to you and you want to get the control back. And understand too, is, and I would throw something back, well, is price the only issue? Is price the only issue here? I thought the good school districts and the 4,000 square feet and the 7 bathrooms were important to you. Because I could find you a home for $200,000, it's just not in a good school district, and the neighborhood's not as safe. Well, that's him. Then the mind game. You look terrible. You're kind of ugly. What is it? Time of day, no he's fully tempted. They attack your ideas. It's a psychological game. They're going to make fun of you. They might make faces at you. Identify it. The short seat, the smoke, not buying you food. What is the philosophy between you sitting in the sun or in the small chair? Can we switch chairs tomorrow? Can I bring 10 people tomorrow too? Can I bring my own chair? Just identify. Let them know it's not getting to you. Because most people sit in a small chair and it's a subconscious thing. They feel little. They don't even think about it. It's just they didn't feel in control. It's just one of those subconscious triggers that most people can't even identify. Okay? Because I'm not going to negotiate with you. And the dog says, then I'm going to pee on the carpet. That's what happens sometimes. And we talked about the phony offer. People are going to come and just going to give you a phony offer. It's not real. They're trying to tie up the property. Mentally, you've sold it. What happened? You tell everyone. You quit taking phone calls. You're done. Oh, I've sold it. And it wasn't even a real offer. Mentally sold. Very short term, very deceitful. You can tell by your head shaking this has happened. They were just trying to tie it up. So you could get a large non-refundable deposit. One way to do it. You write the contracts. If they back out, there's some penalties. I want to check their litigation records. And always, always, always keep interested parties. Until that cash is in your bank, you're taking phone calls. You never know what's going to happen. Have you ever seen properties fall through right at escrow? Oh, yeah. Always keep. And plus, you're going to be doing more real estate deals. You want to keep those names and numbers anyway. You want to create a database of people that are interested in those types of properties. All right? Then there's the slow no. I'll get back to you. Can you give me 3 weeks? And the slow no. You've seen this. Will it take forever? I'll call you tomorrow, but they don't. They're going to get back to you. How do we handle it? Deadline. And don't stretch the deadline. If you tell them 24 hours, if you tell them 48 hours, that's the deadline. Don't stretch it for them. A really good reason. Again, keep the other interested parties and create that sense of urgency. They ask for 6 days, give them 3. Create the urgency. Slow, no. All right, the next one is the decoy. Can you close this month? They want to close, but then the real issue is the price. Maybe they want paint in the house. Kind of call it red herring versus the date. We call it the French porch theory. Have you ever heard this theory before? Is that there's something they don't want you to see about the house, so they're going to keep things here that they know you're going to notice, that they know you're going to get mad about, that they know you're going to complain about, so you don't see what you really want to see. Does this happen to anybody? Front porch theory. So how do we handle this? Look for the true decoy, or you can give in quickly looking for what you're looking for. Let me give you an example. I was looking at a home, and the realtor got us there at sunset. It was up on the mountainside. Beautiful view of the lake. In the back of the backyard was all mountain. Beautiful. The sun was setting over the lake. Sun was setting. Beautiful. So we started looking at the house. We started going to the top floor. We look around. And there was a few things wrong. We got the main floor, and there's challenges with the deck. And there was painters had left a lot of things in there. There was some trash that hadn't been cleaned up, which I thought was odd for showing the house. There's some trash. There's obvious things that we were going to complain about. And then we got down to the basement, and the sun had set, it was now dark, and none of the lights worked. Isn't that efficient? None of the lights worked. He says, oh, well, it's just an unfinished basement. Something just didn't seem right, because all these other things I was seeing, all these other decoys and things. Well, that's okay, I've got a flashlight in my car. Well, you know, we have, you know, he's like, oh, I'll go get it real fast. It's okay. And we went through it. It had V-shaped cracks in the foundation. Is that good or bad? That's very bad. Many of them. The house was sliding off the hill. Very deceptive. But they planted little things, and it just, something didn't seem right. You have to follow your instinct on that. Or they withdraw. Well, I give up. Why try? They're letting their guard down. Does everyone know what the doorknob closes? You ever heard that before? You're negotiating with somebody, you're not getting where you're selling somebody, and you say, well, sorry. That's okay. Well, I'm sorry. Thank you for your time. And you get up and you reach for the doorknob, and when you reach the doorknob, what do? Can you help me out? This seemed like a perfect fit. What is the one reason you didn't buy from us today? And their guard's down, and they what? They'll tell you what it is, and now you know what it is, and you can solve it. Same type of thing. When people withdraw, they've given up. What they're trying to do is get you to let your guard down. You can play their game too. Oh, I appreciate your time. Says, are you ready to sign the papers? I'm ready to sign the papers, or endorse the papers, or autograph the papers. Sometimes they just feel like they're giving up, but they're really not. They're trying to get you to give up too, or let your guard down. You ready to sign the papers? All right. Then we have the price punch. Is that the best you can do? What is your highest offer? That's 25% higher than I researched. Last time they gave me this. Talk about the solution. Well, what is your best offer? Remember question with a question? Is that the best you can do? What is your best offer? Wow, what did you expect to invest? And ask, you know, is price your only concern? And sometimes people say, well, so-and-so offered me this. What should you do? You call them? A lot of computer companies used to do this. They guarantee they're going to match all the prices, and someone says, well, I could get it for $1,000. And I say, from who? You tell them, and they call them on a three-way call. There's a lot of times what? People are making it up. Making it up. Okay, here's our final offer. If you don't accept this offer, we're going to leave. It's very similar to some of the ones we've seen. You can say, I'll consider a serious offer. What type of offer are you going to accept? And this is when you go back to your win. Remember your range of acceptance, what you want, what you intend, and what you need. Offer a different solution, or if you feel it's going nowhere, you can beat them to it. So here's my final offer. This is what I can do. This is what I'm prepared to do. This is what I can do. Now, careful of this. Whenever anyone's heard split the difference, is this a good thing? It can be. But here's the deceptive part. So you say, I'm at $100,000, and they're at $80,000. And they say, okay, let's meet in the middle at 90. And you say, okay, $90,000. And they say, okay, since you're at 90 and I'm still at 80, how about 85? You see what happened there? It happens quite a bit. Well, you said you're at 90. You say, no, that's not right. And they'll play what? Stupid. What? I don't get it. No, you said you were willing to go to 90 and I'm at 80. How about, 85? See what happened there? You said, see that happen. It's a bait and switch. You say, no, that's the oldest trick in the book. I was at 100 and you were at 80. Let me explain, split the difference to you. That's 90. People say, what? Huh? I don't get it. Say, we're at 90. We can do it for 90. Let me explain this to you. This is how it works. And they'll go, what? What? I don't get it. We're at 90. We're going to pull that on you and just say, what? You said you were willing to go to 90 and I'm at 80. No. I'll go to 100. Thin slicing. You ever heard that term before? They're just going to get a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, and after a while, you've given away the whole ham. I just want another 5%, another 1%. If you add them all up, it's a big chunk of the pie. They're trying to wear you down. That's why you keep great notes. Well, that's the seventh time you've asked for. Keep the good records, or you can always thin slice back. Well, sure. Every time you need one more percent, I will need to do this. They try to disguise it. If they ask for a little bit at a time, over a long period of time, it doesn't seem that big. You could add up to quite a bit. What if I paid cash today? What if I tripled the order? What if I could close? What's the challenge with this one? They're asking, and they're really kind of fishing for something. So if they say that, well, what if I paid cash for the house? You say, well, if you paid cash, I'll do it for $100,000. Says, well, I can't pay cash, but $100,000, I do like that price. They're just looking for a number. So you come back and say, well, is that a hypothetical question? Are you willing to pay cash right now for this house? What if I did lower the price? Or are you willing to place it? If you want it for $2.50 a unit, are you willing and ready right now to place a larger order of 10,000 units? Then,
right? What if?
And then you have the competition, which is the next one. Well, they'll give me this. They'll save me 20%. There might be trust issues. They might be making it up. And you can say, wow, wouldn't price become the only issue? You mentioned location was most important. What would happen if you saved money but you lost the best location? But the main thing with these dirty deeds is just let them know it's not getting to you. You can see exactly what they're doing. Next one is amnesia. Intentional forgiveness, amnesia. Remember, you had the deal all done, you thought you were close, you got back, and what did they say? Well, we've never talked about that. I never agreed to that. Well, you always review your notes before you start up. This is what we've agreed on to so far. So amnesia. We good here? Buyer's remorse, they could be lying, they thought about it, they don't like how it feels anymore, they deny it, and they say, you show them your notes. Well, on August 14th, at 2 o'clock when we met, we talked about this, and this. Well, this is our agreement so far. Review your notes with them. Because they might not be taking notes. A lot of people get there, they expect to remember everything, and of course they come back, they don't remember, or they're just lying to you. It could be an honest mistake, or it could be very deceptive. No, I never agreed to that. We never talked about it. Take very, very good notes. The next one is the I always. We good? Good, go on? Okay. Well, they always get these terms, this always happens. They're trying to force position, they're testing what other companies always give me. Every time I buy a home, I always get this. This is standard to leave all the appliances. I always. So ask for their previous bids. Take a look at it, see if they'll show them to you. Explain the differences. Well, the reason there's a $5,000 difference is because they're not doing this, and this. The contractor's doing this all the time. They give you a bid, does it include everything you need? They just want to make it the lowest. You have to be careful, they do the same type of thing. Well, this contractor said $5,000 and you're at $10,000. You don't have everything in there. Call their bluff. The bait and switch. Decide on the price, the next day they back out. But now that price is the start of the negotiation. So if you agree on $100,000 and they leave a $10,000 deposit, and they come back the next day with an $85,000 check. Happens all the time. Good, I'll take it. For $100,000, here's $10,000 down right here. And they come back, sorry, all I could get was $85,000, it's as close as I can get. So they're $5,000 off. What do you do? You take it? There, yeah, I guess it depends. There might be some situation where you're just glad to get rid of it. It might be okay, but this happens when they just do this. Usually, you say, no, we need another $5,000. I do take credit cards or whatever you want to do to get the rest. But call their bluff or restart the negotiation, or it might be time to walk. If they're pulling things like this, it might be time to walk. Whether they're $5,000 short or even $2,000 short. And sometimes you'll see it even $1,000 short on purpose. Is if they know you're probably going to do what? Well, it's just $1,000. It's not worth negotiating the whole thing again. I don't want to go through this all over again. It's just $1,000, but they did it on purpose. You got to make the call there, what you're going to do. $1,000, is it $10,000, is it $15,000? What is the difference? The sheepish wolf, we call this. Please help me. I'm not good at negotiation. I've never done this before. Please don't take advantage of me. Please don't hurt me. People always step on me. You heard about the term, the wolf in sheep's clothing? That's probably what's happening. It could be true. It could be true, but they're just trying to step back. So keep asking the questions. Keep your guard up. Keep asking the questions. Don't reveal too much. And just make a mental note of what they're doing. I'm trying to let you get your guard down. It could be sincere. But usually when you hear that, you have to be very careful what they're real intent. Don't let your guard down on a situation like that. Reveal what you need to, talk about it, keep the negotiation going, and identify what they are doing. Okay? Then there's the oops. Wow, you got to be ready for this one. Oh, how did that get in the contract? I'm sorry. Oh, my secretary, she's just not very smart. Right? The word choice, how did that word get in there? Oh, I thought we already changed that. Deceitful. And it happens a lot. Always, every time, read the text or have a lawyer read the text. Or you write it. You take it and write it. You make sure the changes are made. Never assume the changes have been made. I know it's a pain to read the contracts and go through, but at least you can go through and make sure you check the things that have been changed. Have they been changed? Have they added anything? And that's the nice thing about Microsoft Word. It does a word count. So you can do a word count every time to see if anything's been added or changed. And that makes your life a lot easier, too. Because wait a minute, there's 10 more words in this one than the other one. Where are those words? What's happening? Did we add a sentence? Be careful that one. So those are the dirty deeds. So one last thing on the red flags. People say, well, just suppose, or before I forget. Have you heard these sermons before? By the way, I'm trying, this is not my business. Or the word honestly. Now, honestly now. Now, what does that say? What have you been before? We'll work out the details later. We'll just have a gentleman's agreement. But always remember, too, when you look at negotiation, that your value is diminished after the service is rendered. What does that mean? Your value is diminished after that service has been rendered. You know, once you've done what you've asked to do and they haven't paid you, you agree on a price, it's not always worth as much to them because it's already done. You agree ahead of time before it happens. Well, it's none of my business, Brian. What we're going to do now is another negotiation. We're going to do a Harvard negotiation this time, an actual real estate deal. Tell me, do you need a break now or afterwards? You doing okay? Now? The dirty deeds wear you out? There's a lot of information. A lot of that's just for reference and note for later on. Let's take a 5-minute break. Is that good? 5-10-minute break. And then we'll come back. You need to find a partner that you haven't negotiated with. We're going to do an actual real estate negotiation, an actual Harvard study. All right, any other numbers I didn't get? Let's call it on this one. Are you happy with your results? Or you want to see what the average is? You don't know yet, huh? Well, let's talk about it. Come back in. I know. I did that on purpose. Okay, what did you think? Easy for some? We have some people that did not reach agreement. What was the range? The range was from 5,000 would be the lowest to 20,000. In fact, we had some well below 5,000. What were some of the things? Well, we really want to see the numbers. Is that what you want to see? All right. Take a look at these numbers. We had 10,000. We had 3,000 down, 4,000 over 4 years, 4,000, 5,000 down, and then 15,000 over 5 years, 20 grand, 12,000, 10,000, 7,000, 2,000 down and 5,000 over 5 years, 12,000 with 3,000 over 1 year, that's 15,000, 7,000, no payment for 2 years. Here's $300 a month for 5 years, that's 18,000, 11,000 plus 4,000 over 5 years, and here's 2,000 down with $2,500 finance. Oh, wow. So 19,900, 30 years. So our range would probably be, was it 4,000? 4,000 to 20,000. You still happy? But the Moores didn't want it. Well, that was the stipulation. The Moores did. Well, good thought, but the Moores didn't want it. Yeah. Okay. It's interesting to see the range, though, isn't it? Wow, what a range. All the way through as you negotiated it. The 12, well, there was a 19.9 over 5 years. There's a 12,000. There's a 5,000 down and 15,000 over 5 years. So what did we learn? Did preparation help? Did you have your numbers before you went into the negotiation, what you were going to ask for? Did somebody throw out a number and it was accepted too fast? Yeah. You got to be careful sometimes. If you're going to offer the first one, make sure you adjust it a little bit. Because if they accept it too fast, how did you feel? Oh, hey, wait a minute. I should have gone lower. I should have gone higher. I could have got more. I could have got less. Get a little remorse built into there. What about some things that you saw with your partner that worked really well in the negotiation, or even things that kind of brought the negotiation to a standstill? Okay, so the creativity, you like? Just on the other hand? Yeah. So it was good. The questions are good. You felt like she cared. Okay, well, questions, very important. What else? Worked or did not work? Anything happen that kind of wanted you not to negotiate anymore? Yeah. And that could, if you went to the same school, sure. That could happen. I mean, you go back and forth twice, and then you finally said, okay, well, let's talk about it. But a lot of times, then you can shift gears and take a different route. But usually that's very rare. It's very rare, but it could happen. What else happened? Anything that happened that caused you to maybe want to stop the negotiation? Anybody? Too many nice people here? Yeah. Sure. Or you can say, well, I can wait. You can make the phone call now. The standard price? It's usually, well, the range is 5,000 usually to 20,000. And usually, I don't have the exact numbers on this, but usually they see the average appear. We're usually, I think about between 9 to 11,000. It's usually the standard. What were some of the ahas you had when you're doing this negotiation? Is it harder than you thought? Easier? Well, cash is always best. I mean, you have to take a look at the money. $19,000 over 3 years, what is that worth right now? And it takes the emotions out a little bit, too. And that's something to consider. One of the reasons I do this is that you're not as emotionally involved. You're doing it for somebody else as a client, and it's a little more professional, isn't it? It's not as aggravating like the blue banana or some of the others that we've done, because and that might be something. If you're trying to negotiate with someone not getting anywhere, maybe you want to send a third party, someone else to do it for you where the emotions aren't there. Okay. What else? Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about deception tomorrow. And usually you don't want to call them on it. You're usually going to make it a mental note, because if you catch them in a lie, they're going to try to hide their lies more. And so usually you're just reading them and just taking it. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, like I said, so I think it was a good way. Well, we'll do a title search on that. No, we'll double check that. I thought it was less than that. Okay. Yeah, a little deception there. Yeah. Your questions, the diagnosis, getting as much information, and that's what you want. And if you're sincere about it, people appreciate the question. Well, that too, but then you should be trying to get the best for your client anyway. It's a long-term client. You don't want them to fire you. But then too, we think differently if you're getting a commission off of it. Yeah, well, you're thinking differently too. If you're getting a piece of the action, you bet. All right. A little bit here, later tonight we're going to have John come up and talk about real estate and techniques and how to apply a lot of these things. We're going to try a four-party negotiation, which gets really interesting. It's a simple one, but it's fun to see the dynamics of four people together. Let's finish up negotiation, we'll do that a little bit later. All right, we talked about red flags. Another red flag would, someone keeps telling you that they're a church-going person. You fell for that one? Yeah, that's when someone has to tell you about the religion, I think something's up there. I've seen that too many times. That's another red flag, as we call it. So let's talk about negotiation tools. What page is that? 18, thank you. Let's talk about some tools. It says to be a successful negotiator, you need courage, cunning, stamina, and if that doesn't work, try rock, paper, scissors. So that's one tool you can have, rock, paper, scissors. So, just some things. Physically prepare. You've had some sleep. Sometimes you let negotiations go to 3, 4 in the morning, and the deals that look so good at 4 a.m., and you wake up the next morning, what's up? It doesn't look as good. It's like eating at the buffets in Las Vegas. It sounds like a great idea to go to the buffet, but in the morning you just don't respect yourself. It's kind of it just sounded good at the time. Mentally prepare. What if they say this? What if they get angry? What if it gets kind of out of control? Rehearse, visualize. We've talked about persuading first, negotiate second. You can. Discover with questions. We're going to start high with contract. On this one, what I like to point out on this last negotiation is sometimes you think you thought you had a real good number, you put it out, and they said, okay. Like, wait a minute. Could have been a little lower. So start high or start low. Create your win. What you want, what you intend, what you need, and build value, not price. So let's talk about concessions. Let them make the first offer with concessions. I'm not talking about the offer for the price, but concessions. Concessions go back and forth. We learn to reciprocate, small increments, have them work for it. So what we're looking for is nothing concessions, things you don't care to give up. What are some things within real estate you wouldn't care to give up? Yeah, maybe refrigerator, but make them work for it a little bit. Oh, you want the fridge? So you're making a list of nothing concessions. What's another nothing concessions that really doesn't bother you, but you can give in for a concession? New carpet, you're going to do that anyway. Paint, what else? Appliances, any appliances, or maybe you don't want to take the pool table. What other nothing concessions? Chandelier you don't need, leaving the shower curtains. What's that? Drapes? HOA fee? You were going to split the closing costs anyway. When new units. So what you're doing is you're making this list ahead of time. There's the nothing concessions you don't care about, then there's concessions that you really do care about. So some concessions. Maybe it could be some training, depending on your product or service. Support. Installation, lock on future prices, upgrade, extend the warranty. What does a 1-year home warranty really cost? $500. Does that go a long way? Is that a high perceived value? Does that give them peace of mind? You bet. You can extend the warranty. Now, how much does it really cost to extend a warranty on a computer? You're doing computers or electronics. You know how they ask you, they sell you the extended warranty? Is that pure fat to the company? What do I mean by pure fat? Pure profit. Usually the salesperson on an extended warranty will get half of that. Yeah. Some things it might be a good idea, some things are not, but that's something that you could offer. Support, deferred payment. Maybe you don't care if they don't pay in 60 days. Maybe it's okay to defer it for a year. Those are nothing concessions. But what you want to do is you're always trading a concession for a concession. If they want a concession, just like the nibble, you ask for one too. Okay, sure. I'll throw in the piano. But I need you to do this and this and this. Then you pick up the closing cost. Concession for a concession. The deadlines we talked about, this option expires, the price goes up, offer good for 10 days, I can hold this for. Deadlines, concessions, you throw in a moving truck, paint, you use deadlines, and as Vince Lombardi says, I told you, fatigue makes cowards of us all. If you're feeling tired, you're feeling kind of loopy, you need some sleep, and I will put blood sugar, low blood sugar does some strange things to people, isn't that true? You can feel yourself, if you can feel yourself get that way, you might want to take a break. Take a break. Silence. Now, we talked about this. Now, you've heard the phrase, correct me if I'm wrong here, the first one to talk loses. Now, if you've been to the same camp, just like the questions go back and forth and nothing gets answered, you got to step back and take the higher road and answer one of the questions. That's true with silence. If both people have been in the silence and both sides are quiet, nobody's saying anything, and it's been 22 minutes, something needs to change. So here's some options for you. Well, what exactly are you thinking about? The question, you still have control. Do you need any additional information? Is there something else you want to discuss? Is there something I missed? Is there something you want me to point out? Use silence. It can work, but not if both sides are using it. Okay? You also have clarification. Did I understand? Well, let me see if I follow. Let me try to explain. Did anybody use clarification? So what you're saying is, why is that so helpful? Buys you time to think, number one, and number two, what they say and what they mean are come sometimes two different things. Well, almost. And that's what we see in a lot of negotiation is you take what they say at face value, and it's not really what they meant. They said schools, but that's really not top of the list. Dumb is smart. What I mean by that is sophistication breeds resistance. What does that mean? Yeah, if you're too sophisticated, if you're too polished, that's going to breed resistance. If you're too, they see it coming, it could be the car, the way you dress, the way you act, or say, you know what, I'm a great negotiator, I'm one of the best. No one's ever been able to beat me. All right, you ready? Okay, not a good idea. Not a good idea. You can don't argue. So some tips. Repetition increases acceptance. I think you need to fill these in. But we're talking about repetition and repeating. The more you can repeat things and talk things, the first time you talk about a number, they're going to resist a little bit. We keep talking about that number and the different things. The more you mention it, we're going to talk about this tomorrow too, is when we talk about similarity, right? We actually talked about today, similarity. What is the biggest indicator a local person is going to win an election? Not national, local. The biggest indicator somebody in your local community is going to win an election. Name recognition, which comes from number of signs. Usually the person, if they don't know who it is, they haven't researched it, they just look at the name and they pick one. The one they usually pick is the one they've seen the most. And so the more you see something, the more you begin to get accepted or begin to like it. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. If it's a negative or positive, if it's eighth out there, it's recognition. I can even take Chinese symbols and show you Chinese symbols. I'll show you, I'll keep showing to you for about 10 minutes. And there's one that appears more, lower than the other. And I ask you, which one do you like best? And most people will choose what? The one they've seen the most. It's recognition. Easiest issues first. Talked about this. Set it aside. If you're at roadblock, set it aside. What are some of the easiest issues to solve? Percent. We can do owner fault. And it's okay to walk. Buying the house to send the kids to school. Remorse. They accepted it too fast. Maybe you saw this in this exercise. They accepted too fast. Remember those feelings you felt? They want to work for it. They want to fight a little bit. They expect a little battle. The set-aside technique we've talked about. Set it aside. A few more tips. Keep perspective. Perceptive. And this is especially important. Tomorrow we're going to talk about deception. How do you know when someone's lying to you? How do you know when they're deceiving you? How do you know when they're indifferent? What do you do when they're angry? What do you do when they're upset? What do you do when they're frustrated? We'll spend some time talking about that tomorrow. Is it okay to lose a few battles? Sure. Well, I wanted 10%, but I'll give you 7. Now, if you get into what we call the standoff, okay, you're at an impasse. I saw somebody this last negotiation, there was an impasse. Even the blue banana, there's that impasse. Go back to what you've agreed upon. You hit a brick wall, go back. Okay, this is what we agreed on so far. Maybe bring in a new negotiator. Have you noticed with the negotiations we've done here, there's some personalities you really don't like to negotiate with? You don't have to point fingers. But I see your heads going up and down. Some people, maybe it's okay to bring somebody else in, or bring a third party in, or bring an agent in. Change the topic, take a break. Different things that you can do. But I would recommend you take a break and you come back, okay, this is what we've agreed on so far, and then push forward. Look for creative alternatives. And always give people room to save face. You caught somebody in a lie, right? You caught somebody in a lie. You call them on it, you give them room to save face, you have to be careful there. You don't want to back them into a corner, especially with these emotional type issues. So plenty of questions, open-ended, hypothetical questions, and yes-no questions. Part of this, too, is when you're negotiating, especially real estate, you want to have other opinions, other people look at it as part of the preparation process. Because our knee-jerk reactions aren't necessarily right. Does everyone have good members of the teams as far as inspectors and real estate agents, spouses sometimes? I was looking at a foreclosure, and it had been on the market for a long time. The price kept dropping. And I found something up. So we went to look at it, and we noticed that the front pillar had sunk about 6 inches and it was pulling the roof down with it. And the sidewalk was starting to crack a little bit. We walked inside, and it was full of box elder bugs. You know box elder bugs? I'd never seen them before. But there was literally 2 inches of dead bugs between the screens and the windows, and they were everywhere. Infestation. I was thinking they're cockroaches. And once you get cockroaches in your home, you really get rid of them? Huh. So I'm thinking, no wonder it hasn't sold. And I said, well, there's no way. My wife said, well, wait a minute. Well, let's take a look at some of these things. Call on the experts. we find out that you only get box elder bugs if there's a box elder tree in your backyard. You cut down the tree, the bugs leave. How much does that cost?
Oh, it's under $1,000.
And then we get someone to look at the pillar, which wasn't part of the foundation of the house. And then we find out from someone who did a home inspection that you can lift pillars. So people, they could come out, it was a couple $1,000, they dig a hole. You guys know this? They dig a hole and they get a car jack and they jack it up. They leave the jack in there and they leave the cement good as new. And this house had well over $100,000 in equity in it, but nobody saw past that. The big picture. Very profitable investment. I have to give that credit to my wife, though, because I was letting me, oh, cracked foundation. Bugs were gone. The hard questions. I don't understand. Before I answer that, repeat the question. You just utter questions. I don't understand what you're saying. Before I answer that, can you do this for me? Did you repeat the question? Why do we ask them to repeat the question? Clarification, just to think a little bit. By time. Okay, we good? All right. So here's things you never say that will destroy the negotiation. Oh, you wouldn't understand. What does that say? Yeah, you're too stupid to understand. Or, well, that's none of your business. Well, that might be true, but that brings up the defenses pretty fast. Calm down. What does that tell somebody? You're out of control. Yeah, that makes it worse. Just calm down, would you? Calm down. Or, what's your problem? Why are you so upset? What's your problem? Is that a good one? No. Or, why don't you be reasonable, meaning what? They're being unreasonable. What about what? Breathe. Take a breath. Breathe. You need to take a time out. Wouldn't be very recommended. It's always good to get little things like, sounds like a perfect fit. Let's get the paperwork started. There's good things to say, too. So increase the pie. How can you make the pie bigger? Scarcity mentality. Society's taught us only one answer, prejudging. It's interesting. People were brought in to play a game. And it was the same game, but they called it a different name. For one group, the game was called the Wall Street game. And the other group was called the community game. Okay, it's a game. Wall Street game, community game. It was the same game, but did that name affect how people acted towards their opponent, the opposition? It did. It was a big difference. They were more aggressive when it was called Wall Street. Kind of interesting. We have to be careful of self-serving perceptions. We tend to pass over information. You know, in prison, everyone's innocent. Isn't that true? They have their perceptions. Well, wait a minute, you're innocent, but you were at a bank wearing a ski mask. Well, I was cold. Well, it was summertime and it was 92 degrees outside. Well, I was still cold. Well, according to the report, you had a gun. Well, I wasn't going to use it, I was just for my protection, you know? Same type of thing. We enhance our position, we vilify, but a lot of times we miss out because of self-perception bias. So some final questions. You have a copy of this, right? Did everyone win? Will they keep the commitments? Any remorse? Everyone benefits? Will they do business in the future? Now, just the pointers that you have, separate the people from the problem. Very important. Let's focus on the issue. Only one person angry at one time. Very important. Hard on the problem, soft on the person. You emphasize common ground, but I do want to point out that 80%, the research shows that 80% of the negotiations can revolve around four issues. Four issues is the main four issues. So, these questions work very well. And what I want to talk about now is the pre-negotiation checklist. Studies at MIT and Harvard all show the same thing. The biggest mistake people make is the preparation. They go on, they're winging it. They're just hoping for the best. Put yourself in their shoes. Why are they selling the property? Why are they so upset? What's going to happen? What are they going to do? So I've developed, in fact, can we, Steve, hand out the, instead of writing these down, the pre-negotiation checklist? We'll hand those out. I'll give you those. This is just a list of questions that you can take, you can photocopy, use, everything you should ask yourself before you go into negotiation. I know I won't spend a lot of time. It's just something you need to look at before you go into negotiations. Does that make sense, everyone? So I'm just going to hand it out to you and just file it, photocopy it, use it for each additional property, collect the information, take as many notes as you can.